Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the sound. It's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you even more information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Are you a recent grad looking for that elusive first job? Well, we're going to open up helping you get it with an invitation to Recruit CT. On June 10th in Trumbull, over 60 area employees will be looking to fill 600 or more positions at this second annual Recruit CT job fair. Jobs in finance, marketing, IT, human resources, engineering, and design will all be represented at this event. Hear all about it. Then we'll touch base with the director of the 21st Annual International Festival of Arts and Ideas, offering more than 80% of its two packed weeks of excitement in downtown New Haven absolutely free. We'll tell you all about it, along with steering you to some of those gems among the hundreds of free and ticketed events. Then we'll close talking with a representative of Connecticut's Legislative Commission on Aging. We'll learn about the vital work this panel accomplished in the final days of this year's legislative session and how that work will benefit the state's aging population in the future. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this news. Anyone seeking information on how to plan for future long-term care costs is invited to attend a public forum, The Missing Link in Retirement Planning, Why and When to Consider Long-Term Care Insurance. The forum is going to be held on June 7th at the Cheshire Public Library on Main Street, and the program is starting at 6 p.m. Doors open at 5:30, and it's open to the general public, absolutely free, and no insurance sales are taking place. Attendees will benefit from this forum if they're between age 40 and 65. And have or plan to have assets of at least $75,000, excluding their car and their home, in retirement. To register for the program, call 800-547-3443 or visit ctpartnership.org. Well, if you're a recent grad looking for that elusive first job, well, the answer is Recruit CT. Coming up on June 10th in Trumbull, more than 60 area employers are going to be looking to fill over 600 positions at the second annual Recruit CT Job Fair. Jobs in finance, marketing, IT, human resources, engineering, even design will be represented at Recruit CT. If you'd like to pre-register and find out more information, just go to their website, recruitct.com. This June 10th event, once again, is happening in Trumbull, and to tell you more about it is our spokesperson for the event. This is the second year we're speaking with him about this as well, and we're so pleased to be partnering with you guys again. David Lewis is CEO of Operations, Inc. of Norwalk, and they'll be presenting this event. So, David, thanks for joining us on the program.
Thanks for having me back, John.
So it's pretty exciting times. We're hearing, there's a marked difference in the job landscape today than there was when we talked to you even at this time last year. We're hearing some pretty exciting numbers at the national level and some progressive numbers at the state level. So that's got to be pretty exciting, getting people fired up. People are hearing that there's more jobs. So obviously, maybe even some of the folks that might have kind of temporarily given up hope, maybe coming out, I guess, to this to look to get reengaged in the workforce.
Yeah, I think certainly it is the best job market for recent college grads since probably 2007. And the nature of the positions are really compelling as well. You often go to a job fair, and much of what you'll see and hear about are commission-based positions and jobs that are focused on sales only. We're really happy to see that the employers who are planning to participate in this year's event have positions in pretty much all types of disciplines and for all career paths. And so I think the likelihood is that if you come down and you do a good job at presenting yourself, you're likely to walk out of there with an offer within a few weeks of the event.
Now, they say that the success of an event is highly dependent on the partners who are presenting it, and you have certainly aligned yourself with a fantastic partner in the Connecticut Business and Industry Association. They have been guests on the award-winning For the People for decades. Pete Gioia, a very close and long personal dear friend of mine as well. Tell us a little bit about the development of CBIA's partnership and a little bit more on the background and evolution evolution of Recruit CT?
So I was a board member for 4 years. I'm now considered board emeriti for the CBIA. And as a member of the Connecticut business community for over 15 years, I believe strongly in trying to foster an environment in the state that is as supportive as possible of business. And really, that is CBIA's mantra. And, you know, it struck me a number of years ago, sitting in a board meeting, as we're listening to the statistics, and one of the key issues for the state has been that the kids that grow up in the state, when they graduate college, don't come back to Connecticut to live and to work. They go elsewhere. And it's a big issue. And I said, well, listen, there's some great companies here, and I just wonder if it's a matter of awareness. So why don't we go ahead and try and figure out a way to facilitate a connection between the two? And the CBIA was completely behind that effort, and we're lucky to have them as a partner here. And the idea is very simple. You know, tell the employers in the area that if they come down to an event like this and tell people what opportunities they have for recent grads, we'll take care of getting the grads there. And so it's a grassroots effort on both sides. We do a lot of work to be able to get the students out, reaching out to people through social media and through high schools and colleges. And we've got some great partners in CBIA and in the companies that are planning to come out there to make that vision a reality.
Excellent. Well, Operations Inc. is in Norwalk. Recruit CT is happening in Trumbull. CBIA is based in Hartford. Does this mean that folks shouldn't be concerned about their geographic location when they're coming to this show, that there might be opportunities available for them beyond Central and Lower Fairfield County?
Yeah, that's a great point. So the one thing we're certainly focused on are jobs in Connecticut, so that's the only real criteria. But where in Connecticut those jobs are located is a pretty sizable span that really, if you draw a line from Hartford all the way down to New Haven and then go west from there, that entire part of the state is covered by employers that are participating in the event. And I know of several companies that actually are closer to the New London area that are planning to participate. So I wouldn't look at this necessarily as geographically limiting, other than the opportunity to find jobs that are specifically within the state of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. And as this program airs the weekend before the event, we're planning for this for the June 5th airing. Do you anticipate there might still be an opportunity for companies that might be looking for these recruits to join, or are you close to sold out as we speak now, a week ahead of the broadcast?
No, I think we've got also a great partner in the Trumbull Marriott, and they've become extremely integral in making this event a success. And to that end, they've given us a lot of flexibility here to be able to grab more space as needed. So right now, while we're on track to have a fantastic turnout on the employer side, my sense is that we'll be able to, just as we did last year, accommodate late arriving employees as late as the day prior to the event itself.
Excellent. The other thing that's, I guess, important to stress is that while this is only the second year for Recruit CT, Operations Inc. and you as its CEO, David, have had a great track record of success in running job recruitment activities.
Yeah, we acquired the largest network of job boards in the state, an organization called All County Jobs, back in 2012. And through the various job boards that we own now and service around the state, we've been fortunate enough to run job fairs through mostly the Fairfield County market. And that experience really lends itself very positively to what we do at this event. I'm very proud of how we, really pay attention to the detail and ensure that in this particular case, the graduates that come out have a very positive experience, as do the employers, that these are really good, well-paying jobs with reputable organizations, that the process is smooth and well thought out. It's a dignified experience at any of our events that we run. And at the end of the day, people get jobs. And, especially for the graduates, this is an opportunity to really land on your feet. It's a statistic out there that's not widely reported, but well over 60% of graduates are handed their college degree and are immediately in the ranks of the unemployed. They don't have a job when they graduate. Mm. And so putting them in a position where they can stand in front of not just one company, but close to 60, maybe even 70 by the time we get to the point of the event, and have an opportunity to walk out of there with a job offer or get a job offer within a few weeks of the event, I think is a fantastic way to get anyone's career started.
Well, David Lewis, we continue to also see in the headlines and read and hear in the news about the growing availability of jobs, that there is still a great preponderance of these jobs in the service sector or in kind of part-time or more part-time status than full-time. Can you speak to some of the vendors and participants who will be at Recruit CT and to the proportion of full-time positions they are recruiting for?
Well, I can tell you that because it's a job fair that's focused specifically on recent college grads, there very rarely is a tolerance in that audience for opportunities that are just focused on anything of a part-time nature. Mm. So we're happy to share that the positions that are being filled in virtually all circumstances are in fact full-time positions. So nobody's going to come out essentially underemployed per se. It's going to be an opportunity for them to come and talk to employers about full-time positions in some really great firms throughout the state.
And these are for everything from engineering level candidates down to creatives and those who may be graduating with degrees that may not necessarily be matched to the field that they're going into, but certainly provide them with the talents to maybe shift in play to answer the call to some of the companies who will be attending Recruit CT.
Yeah, and I think, listen, you know, you come out of college with, in very few instances, a very clear understanding of what you want to be for the rest of your life professionally. And so, you know, a lot of it is sort of chicken or egg thought process. You know, do I come out and look for jobs in a specific area, or do I go ahead and go to an event like this and have a job find me? And I think that's the beauty of what we're offering here is, you know, come to an event and see a very diverse set of both companies you've heard of and companies you've never heard of before. And all of them have just a really nice wide range and variety of opportunities. And what we see, and we saw the last time around that we did this, was that, you know, you'd get these graduates that come in who sort of kind of had an idea that they wanted to do something in one particular direction, but the place that they found themselves a job was for a completely different type of opportunity, which is great because it in some cases you need that. In some cases, you know, you come out with a generic degree in psychology or history or sociology. It doesn't bleed something in terms of a profession like in accounting or finance or some other area. And that's most students. Most students have those general liberal arts degrees and not necessarily a clear understanding of what to do. Coming here and being able to essentially shop around, especially in this kind of market, where you really have the opportunity to be more of a buyer versus a seller, is great. And I think any of the graduates who show up this year are really going to have their pick of some fantastic companies and very interesting career paths.
Yeah, and as we are hearing in the news, it is becoming a little bit more of a buyer's market, which bodes well for all involved in Recruit CT. So before we leave you, let's tap your expertise as a executive, as well as someone who presents job fairs and deals with employment-related issues on a moment-to-moment basis. What are a few of the most important things that these new grads and other attendees to Recruit CT are going to need to know or be have with them when they come?
So job fairs should be treated just like a job interview. So what would you do if you were going on a job interview? You would dress for the part, so dress for success. You'd bring a copy of your resume. In this case, bring a whole bunch of copies. And don't worry, if you run out of them, we have the ability to print right there on the spot. All you have to do is email it to us, and we'll go ahead and we'll print more for you. You come in and you have an understanding of what it is that you're going to say to the most common questions you should expect to be asked. You know, tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me a little bit about what you did at school. Did you do any kind of internships? What are the kinds of things you like to do? Are you into team sports? What are your interests as a whole? Tell me about your computer skills and what you've done there. All of those types of things are going to get asked to you. Now, a job fair is different than an interview because all of what I've just described may happen in all of 2 or 3 or 4 minutes, but it's like the old adage, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. So you're there to make an impression. You've got to prepare and practice shaking people's hands, looking them in the eye, smiling, having a good attitude, and having a plan for what you're going to say. You do those kinds of things, you're going to walk out with the next round of interviews from the firms that are represented that you go talk to.
So in this sort of speed dating format versus what someone might experience in an actual job interview, would you say it would bode well for the attendees to actually have, you did say to prepare some remarks, but really trim it down to like a 30-second or a 1-minute elevator conversation that has at least a few key components that will be universally required or requested by the companies who are meeting the applicants?
Yeah, it's a term we use a lot, and I don't think a lot of the newer generation even understands it. When you say elevator speech, you mean you're talking about something that you can say on the average length of an elevator ride. This is no different. You need to have it down to about 30 seconds. Here's who I am. Here's what I'm looking for. You need to be prepared to listen for the questions that are going to follow. You know, and listen, most companies who are represented at a job fair like this are looking to see how well you're put together, both in terms of your physical appearance, how well you do in terms of your communication skills. Job seekers who are recent college grads don't have a lot of substance on their resume. They haven't really worked yet. But they are looking to see, did you intern? What kind of internships did you do? What was the nature of the work that you were involved with? They're looking at what your computer skills are. They're looking at your school background. You should be prepared to talk about the things that you put in front of them on that piece of paper. And, yes, you need to be prepared to do so in small sound bites so that it fits into, you know, maybe a 3 or 4 minute conversation window.
And lastly, the old school rules are that even in your first job interview, unless it's offered, you don't really want to talk about money. Is it taboo to either ask about or expect to hear about compensation or benefits when you're interacting at something like Recruit CT?
You're not going to get a lot of specifics in terms of actual dollars and cents. You're going to hear from some companies who offer a commission or a combination of base and commission type compensation, but just at that level. So, again, in this type of a setting, the in-depth conversation that you'd like to get, you're going to get at that second or third interview. And, again, remember, companies coming to events like these expect to be able to sit with you, talk for 2 to 5 minutes, get a feel for whether or not you're someone they want to talk to further, and then come back and bring you back in later to go ahead and get into more of the detail. For now, it's about that 2 to 5 minute window and having that kind of focus.
Excellent. So once again, if you're a recent grad looking for your first job, the answer is Recruit CT. It's coming up June 10th at the Trumbull Marriott, right at the crux of Route 8 and the Parkway. Very easy to get to from anywhere. And there'll be dozens and dozens of area employers from around the state. And they're going to be looking to fill hundreds of different positions. This is the second annual Recruit CT Job Fair. You can get jobs in finance, marketing, IT, human resources, engineering, and design, to name a few. All of those employers will be represented at Recruit CT. To pre-register and find out more information, go to recruitct.com. Once again, it's happening on June 10th in Trumbull, the best place for new grads to land a great new career, but you should pre-register once again at recruitct.com. David Lewis of Operations Inc. and his team has been leading this effort for these past 2 years, and I don't doubt that it's going to be a fantastic experience, not only for the employers, but for all of the young people who are going to be walking out of Recruit CT in Trumbull on June 10th with job prospects in hand. So, David, I wish you luck. I wish all the prospects and all the participants and vendors luck, and have fun and get to work at Recruit CT. All right. Well, right about this time every year, we prep folks for one of the greatest shows happening in Connecticut anytime, any year. And, of course, this year is no different. The 2016 International Festival of Arts and Ideas is in its 21st season, and we are back on the line with Mary Lou Oleski. She's executive director of the festival. Mary Lou, thanks for joining us this morning.
John, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
So tell us a little bit about some of the brand newest aspects of the festival here in its 21st year. It's been a number of years for you, so you've had every opportunity to look back, not just on last year's, but on all of the festivals that you've done to fine-tune and tweak and refine things down. What are some new things that we're going to see this year?
Well, you know, John, it's really exciting for me to see how much we've grown as a place where people come from far and wide to see world premieres and U.S. premieres. And this season's got a rich assortment. We could not be more proud of the relationship that we've had with the National Theatre of Scotland. You may remember that we premiered The Strange Undoing of Prudencia Hart in 2012, bought it back because it was a sold-out wild show that people loved in March, and we are getting ready to open their latest triumph. It's called Our Ladies of Perpetual Succor. It is from the creators of Once and Billy Elliot. It is a musical about a Catholic girl choir, wins a competition, goes to the big city to win the national award, and instead they have a wild coming-of-age experience. It's a great show, features music of ELO, Electric Light Orchestra, for those of us who remember rock and roll in the 70s. I promise you that their pitch-perfect version of these songs will keep in your memory for a long time and keep you dancing in the aisles.
Yeah, and perfectly aligning with Jeff Lynne's new ELO and new album premiere a couple of weeks ago. So a lot of ELO news going on, and that's pretty exciting for New Haven too.
Exactly, and this is a U.S. exclusive. It premieres here and it goes straight to London's West End. So we expect to see it again in the U.S., but this is the only place you'll be able to see it, and that is so exciting for us. We're also really thrilled to be working on a world premiere that we are co-commissioning from Wendy Whalen, the great New York City Ballet star, is making contemporary work now. This premiere is with her muse collaborator, Brian Brooks, amazing choreographer, with music from Brooklyn Rider, which is a really progressive string quartet, and we're going to have that premiere here on the 23rd, and then it'll go off to national tour, including Jacob's Pillow and other places. So, again, New Haven is the place to see things first. We're really excited about that. The other thing we like to do are unusual experiences that you wouldn't find in other places that may not necessarily need a stage. And again, another premiere from the UK is a piece called The Money, which is an absolute amazing, fun thing for people to do. Essentially, you buy a ticket either as a benefactor or a silent witness, and you become one of the people who decides what to do with the money. Those people who come in as benefactors, their ticket price is put in a pot, and you have 90 minutes, essentially, to decide what you and your cohort would do with the money. And there are no rules other than you have to agree unanimously in 90 minutes. So this is a theater of people. This is a game show meets theater, meets reality TV show, and it really is not to be missed. I've seen it in two UK cities. I'm just dying to see what Connecticut does with this.
Excellent. How about from logistical standpoints, any new stages or locations, anything new related to folks getting in and out in terms of parking, transport, or travel that you'd like to remind people about?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got a great promotion going on with Shoreline East. That's an easy way to get here from the shoreline, and Metro North is also promoting the festival, and that's an easy thing to do as well. We're really, really excited about our free programming. As you know, that's been a hallmark of the festival for all of its life, and we have a whole section that's, you know, for family members of all ages called Free Play. It's a set of concerts. It's Box City. It's a maker movement, make it yourself festival. It's got a broad range of activities. You can get all this information off of our website at artidea.org. So we're really excited about that as a destination. And then, you know, we're opening the festival on the green. We have a kind of rebranded stage for our first Niagara. It's our first Niagara main stage. There are sponsors, and we're opening that with George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic on June 11th. So I think people are really looking forward to that. We're hearing a lot of anxiety about traffic getting into town for that. There won't be any issues because parking will be $5. You can get a parking voucher off of our website. So, you know, easy peasy to come in and out of New Haven and have a lot of fun.
Fantastic. So for folks joining us, we're on the line with Mary Lou Oleski. She's executive director of the International Festival of Arts and Ideas. The 21st season of this festival is coming into New Haven June 10th through 25th, and there's loads of highlights and other things that we'll talk about over the next few minutes with Mary Lou. So Mary Lou, looking back across at least your tenure of working with the festival, you're still at about 80% of everything happening at no cost to the visitors. Has that been pretty consistent, or do you find these days with the economy and the cost of having to put up even sometimes, you know, somewhat austere forms of entertainment, there's a little bit more need to pass some of that cost on to the spectators?
Yeah, well, you know, there's no question that the pressures of the economy make keeping things free a challenge. But there are a couple of things that we're doing that I think not only help us on the budget side, but also help our community, help ourselves. So one of the things that we've started is a ticket fund. We are working to make sure that not only our free events are accessible, but that some of our ticketed events are accessible. So last year we gave away about $130,000 worth of tickets that was underwritten by donors. And we've got a ticket fund button. If you come and buy tickets from us, you can throw $10, $20 into that fund and make sure that somebody who otherwise wouldn't be able to participate, you know, can actually come and enjoy some of our ticketed events. So that's really exciting. And I have to say, we are already seeing a lot of generosity from our community. You know, we don't charge a ticket fee online for, you know, most places you spend, you know, anywhere from $5 to $12 for a service charge online ticket. There's no charge to buy a ticket from us online. We'd rather you put the money in the fund so we can get some more people in seats that otherwise might not be able to afford it. So that's been working out really, really well, and we hope people think about doing that when they go online. The other thing that's happening is that our audience is coming from further and further away. So while we are still the place where you can bring your picnic basket and you can bring your blanket and you can bring your family and you can sit out on the green and hear and see some of the great artists of the world, we also recognize that people who are coming on trains, you know, people who are coming from further distances, staying in hotels, they may not have their blanket and their picnic baskets. So there are ways that you can you know, access the festival and get services. So you can reserve a seat in our hospitality area. You can, for a fee, you can rent a chair on the green for a fee. So these are ways in which that we are augmenting the costs of our free events while providing better services to visitors. Yeah. If you want to come and you want to park your car for $5 and bring your picnic basket and have the most elaborate meal that you want from your kitchen table, we are thrilled with that. But if you want to come and you want to do it in a way that's a little bit easier, or you can't, you don't have the capacity to carry your food, there are great restaurants downtown, and you can do it in a more service-oriented way, and that helps to augment our costs. We are committed to this festival being for everybody, and we are working really hard to make sure that that remains the case.
Great. The International Festival of Arts and Ideas in downtown New Haven is turning 21 this year. It's happening June 10th through 25th throughout New Haven. Artidea.org is the only website you need to know in order to access all of the information, all of the lists of performances and talks and exhibits and things, how you can donate money so other folks who couldn't afford to go can go to ticketed events and find out about all the hospitality and accoutrement available to you. The 2016 festival is presented with major support from the Connecticut Office of the Arts, First Niagara, Yale University, Comcast NBC Connecticut. Also, of course, our friends at the City of New Haven, the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the Carolyn Foundation. We've got a few more minutes with Mary Lou Oleski. She's executive director of the festival. We'll be back to talk to her just a little bit more and find out a few hidden gems tucked in among the hundreds and hundreds of different things going on at the festival this year. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs John Voquette for Connoisseur Media. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Climb, explore, and discover your favorite vehicles at Easter Seals Family Fest featuring Touch a Truck on Saturday, June 18th from 11 to 2 at All Kids Child Care Center, 128 Avenue of Industry in Waterbury. The event is free and open to the public. Rain or shine, catch the exciting lineup of vehicles, the Critter Caravan, pet live llamas, dance to the DJ, get a ticket to ride the trackless train. You can enjoy face painting and purchase tasty treats from area food trucks. If you'd like more information, just visit easterseals.com/WaterburyCT. We also remind you that the American Red Cross presents its 11th annual Red, White, and You Ball on Saturday, June 11th at the Connecticut Convention Center in Hartford. The theme is We All Bleed Red, and the event celebrates and highlights the importance of blood donation. The event begins with a reception at 6 featuring silent auction items, interactive photo booths, and live music. For tickets or information, just go to redcross.org/redcrossball. We're pleased to be back with Mary Lou Oleski. You hear her name about this time every year on the award-winning For the People, executive director of the International Festival of Arts and Ideas coming into the greater New Haven area June 10th through 25th in its 21st year. So, Mary Lou, as we try to make you pare down during every interview we do with you each year, let's talk about some of the more lesser known or hidden gems, if you will, of the festival. And let's start with the lectures or talks that are have been growing in popularity and as a result have been bringing in luminary subjects presenting every year.
Yes, the ideas portion of our festival is exploding, actually, I have to say. And I'm looking forward to it this year. We're really looking at themes around what it means to be at home, to find home, what happens to people when they're displaced from their home. I think it's a theme that are in a lot of our minds, considering the massive global refugee crisis and other reasons for people to be displaced. So there's a fantastic travel writer by the name of Pico Iyer who's going to be talking about when houses are not homes and talking about what it means to be a global citizen. We're very excited about a collaboration with Penn America, writing home narratives of place and displacement in the Americas. We've got four Latin American writers talking about their immigration stories and their sense of place in the Americas. We are really, really excited to take some of this conversation and think about what it means to be family. And a really, really interesting talk on aging and dementia with a puppeteer from China who's building a piece called Papa's Time Machine that has actually helped his father, who is actually suffering from Alzheimer's, begin to remember family stories that were lost and what that means from a scientific perspective. So, you know, you take these experiences, these human experiences, and you look at it from different prisms, and that's what our ideas do. You can't have a festival without food. I cannot tell you how excited I am about the chef Kenji Lopez Alt. He's a Food Network superstar. He's going to be with us doing a talk on the science of food. He calls his book The Food Lab, and he's also doing a separate demonstration on the science of brunch. I mean, like, don't you just love that? The
yes.
science of brunch.
Yes, I know.
I need a mimosa when I say that.
I was going to say, what percentage of folks really want a Bloody Mary when they're ordering that mimosa? Let's just let's run the analytics on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
And then, of course, there will be a conversation about the election, particularly the millennials' influence on this election.
Yep.
I mean, clearly, we've watched it shift now pretty dramatically over the time of the primaries. By the time we get to June, you know, maybe we'll have some more clarity and some predictions from our pundits.
Very good. Well, we've only got a few more minutes with you, Mary Lou, but there was something that really struck my eye when I was perusing this massive schedule of incredible things that are going to be happening at the 21st International Festival of Arts and Ideas. And that is the combination of what looks to be one of the most unique visual and sounding and feeling experiences that you may be presenting. It's a ticketed event, and it's called AirPlay.
Yeah, well, you know, we've become the place in Connecticut for contemporary circus. And every year we try to put a different perspective on it based on the artists that we're presenting. And AirPlay is the work of a company called Acrobufo, and it's essentially a fanciful musical explosion of Holtz the Planets. And it is beautiful, and it is lush, and it's fun. And I think people will really, really love it. We're also welcoming Cirque Mechanics to the New Haven Green for a very special closing night concert with the New Haven Symphony with William Boughton on the podium. I think he may be doing more than just conducting. I think there's some acrobatics in his future, but we may not have told him that yet, so maybe we're telling him that now. I'm not sure.
As you roll out the trampoline to the
That's
podium.
Right. That's right.
Very good. Well, I have to say, back in 1996 when Anne Calabrese, Gene Hanley, and Rosalind Meyer envisioned bringing in some sort of cultural festival into downtown New Haven, who'd have thought here 21 years later it would have grown into such an international destination, not only for the artists and speakers and other participants who are on the stage, but for people who are literally traveling in from all points of the globe to see those performances. It is the 21st International Festival of Arts and Ideas, happening June 18th through 25th throughout downtown New Haven. More than 80% of the performances and activities are free. You can find out about travel, transport, ticketing, and even how to help other folks get to see some of the great activities who couldn't afford it. All you need to do is go to artidea.org, and I imagine by now there's an app for that, Mary Lou?
You know what? Our website is fully mobile, and so there is not an app. You just go to artidea.org. You can do everything from buying tickets and donating to looking at the calendar. So no app needed.
Okay. Anywhere from anything at artidea.org. Tune in wherever you are checking the web for all the information, and we hope to see you in downtown New Haven for this activity sometime or every day between June 10th and 25th. Don't forget the pizza fest going on lunch hours on Thursday and Friday of the festivals. We want to thank you once again for taking time to speak with us. Mary Lou, we know you're quite busy as you're coming into the festival. So thank you so much. Good luck. And we'll see you in downtown New Haven. Well, when last we left our friend Christy Covell, she was saying farewell from a former job and is transitioning into the position of communications specialist for Connecticut's Legislative Commission on Aging. And in that capacity, she is back and with us in studio here in Hartford today. Great to see you again, Christy, and thanks so much for coming up and speaking about this. We hear about the silver tsunami. We're both moving quickly on our respective surfboards toward that tsunami. So lots of folks getting older here in Connecticut, and Connecticut's Legislative Commission on Aging is doing great work preparing the state and communities around the state for the changing demographics that are going to impact nearly every facet of our society here in Connecticut, and a bunch of other work that we're going to talk about. And I'm not going to be the one to do it. We'll let you do it. Thanks for coming. And we should proceed our conversation by letting folks know that while we're taping this here on the last Friday in April and the legislative session is in its final days, we may be talking about some legislation that may or may not see success as the session wraps up, which will probably happen before we air the program. But that does not discount or diminish the great work and important legislative initiatives that were on the table this year. Some will carry on till next year. Others will find success and go into effect. So welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to see you again.
So tell us a little bit more about the Legislative Commission on Aging. Because there's another department in the state of Connecticut that also handles folks of a certain age.
You're absolutely right. And so the Legislative Commission on Aging, we are a nonpartisan public policy and research office off the Connecticut General Assembly. We are one of six legislative commissions, mm-hmm. and so we're constituent commissions, meaning we work on policy and research. There is a State Department on Aging that handles programmatic functions, and they work off of the executive branch of government. We work on the legislative side. So when I'm explaining this, we work for the General Assembly. They're our boss. And we work on aging issues and aging policy issues that are going to impact the state. We are one of, as I mentioned, six legislative commissions. You know, the Permanent Commission of Status of Women, African American Affairs, Latino and Puerto Rican Affairs, Asian American Pacific Affairs Commission. Mm. There are other commissions that handle this as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, different issues.
So according to my data, in less than a decade, 20% of almost every town in Connecticut is going to have a population of predominant population of folks 65 and over. So let's talk a little bit about the rapidly changing demographics here in Connecticut. And are there certain parts of the state or certain communities that are going to be leading this charge or spiking in terms of concentrations of population of seniors?
And so you're absolutely right. And if people want to go to our website, and it's cga.ct.gov/COA, they can see the interactive maps we have on our website that show this transformation. And, you know, in terms of breakdown of population, we are seeing a higher concentration in the Litchfield County area. And there are two towns by 2025 that continue to have a younger demographic. One is Mansfield with UConn, and the other is New Haven with Yale. And with that, 20% or more of the population over the age of 65, what this means is that it's going to impact really every aspect of living in Connecticut, you know, from housing to transportation to social services. I mean, you think about things like the school systems and what we're seeing now with education and the declining enrollments. So what we're trying to do is propose and support sound policy to support our shifting demographic in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And that ranges from everything from health services to medical providers to housing, transportation, planning and zoning, community engagement. So we work in multifaceted areas, you know, in terms of policy to really advocate for our population, which is growing older.
Yeah. Historically, with the commission, have there been policies and issues that have remained constant throughout and up to today versus others that are, you know, beginning to kind of rear their heads in recent years as the proportion of older populations has begun to swell?
So what we've seen in our commission, you know, for some historical perspective, we're 23 years old, and our work has shifted in that time as well. So what we've begun to see is this rapid movement towards aging supportive communities and aging in place. And so our work continues to shift because, let's face it, we're all aging. Connecticut is aging. Mm-hmm. The New England region is aging, and the United States is aging. So what we're seeing is policy that's supporting systems that support people aging in their own homes, whether it's adaptive equipment, whether it's workforce development and having people receive care in the home, whether it's community-based supports. So our work has shifted a little bit more, but it continues to evolve and it continues to grow because there's things like emerging issues that are really up and coming, like elder abuse, which I can speak to the work we've done in that area. So, you know, our work continues to evolve.
And the other component, I guess, is doing the research and trying to have a long view in terms of how the various 169 cities and towns in Connecticut are going to ready themselves as this proportional growth begins to really get traction.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things, one of the legislative mandates, and again, from some context for folks listening today, we work for the legislators. So a lot of our work is by legislative mandate. Mm-hmm. And back in 2013, we were mandated to work on something called livable communities. And through this work, we're now working with cities and towns around the state on different areas around things like complete streets, you know, things like their planning and zoning. We testified on a bill this year around housing, different housing options. And so with that, the challenge for Connecticut, of course, being unique in that we have 169 towns, is the concept of regionalization. And so we're trying to work with a varied group of partners and bring people to the table to sort of collectively work together to come up with really innovative ideas and cost-effective ideas as we all age.
Well, to the extent you may be able to talk about it, Christy, how much has your office and your researchers looked outside of Connecticut and across the country or perhaps even around the world to see how other countries or other states have been doing a great job? Where is Connecticut looking to in terms of leadership to help bring us to the place where we want to be for our aging population?
And that's a great question. So in a couple of different areas, one is the work that we do around rebalancing long-term systems and supports. And Medicaid, which is a payer source for folks who don't have the capacity to pay for services, is 14% of the state budget. And so what we're doing now with rebalancing is trying to, you know, advocate to have those dollars go towards home and community-based services because the average cost of a nursing home is about $146,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And Medicaid pays, you know, portion of that, but it's very costly. States like Vermont, states like Oregon have done a really tremendous job in terms of making those investments in their home and community-based service programs. And we're moving towards that. And again, on our website, people can kind of see the trajectory. We do have a long way to go, but we're moving towards a system of institutional-based care to more community-based care. And ultimately, That's going to save the state a lot of money, but it's really where people prefer to age, that people want to age in their own community. And whatever that means to them, it could be downsizing, it could be a congregate housing, it could be with a family member. Mm. You know, there's all kinds of scenarios that people have, you know, when you say that.
Yeah, we're hearing, of course, for a long time from medical sources and the folks with the Money Follows the Person initiatives and things, how much greater the results and outcomes are for individuals' health and qualities of life and their ability to fight off depression and other psychological and mental health issues that may come with aging, all simply by being able to stay home.
Absolutely. And Money Follows the Person is a great example of a program that we work on, that we sit on the steering committee. You know, as of December in 2015, I believe we've transitioned 3,100 people out of institutions into the community. The goal is 5,000. And with that, you know, it's complex. You know, if you have somebody who's been living in a nursing facility for a number of years, it takes a while to assess, make sure the person is appropriate to be moved out of that setting, make sure the person has those supports in the community. So it's something that is a process, and we've had success with it, and we're going to continue to have more success, but it has to be done in a really methodical way in order to ensure the person is having a high quality of life in the community.
Yeah, and it also would seem to bode well for the morphing of skilled care facilities perhaps into at least a proportion of assisted living or congregate types of situations. Is there some foreseeable future where skilled care facilities will really be for the acutely medically needy?
Well, we've seen that shift, certainly, you know, and I came from the background of working in nursing facilities, you know, for 15 years. And in that time, you know, I definitely saw a shift and a change. And there are some wonderful nursing facilities in the state that provide a very, very much a needed service. And so what you are seeing, though, are people who are opting for that service, they need it. They have maybe an advanced dementia, or they have physical challenges which really prevent them from being able to live at home with 24-hour care. So, yes, you are seeing the acuity level rise and will continue to rise. And they're doing a great job at adjusting and also, you know, seeing what's out there in the community. And a lot of providers have sort of an extension of their business model and provide community support so that they have that relationship with the person in the community. And then if the skilled care is needed, they have the relationship if the person chooses to live there or needs to live there.
Excellent. Our friend Christy Covell is with us. She is communications specialist for Connecticut's Legislative Commission on Aging. Once again, if you'd like to visit and learn about what they do, it's coa.cga.ct.gov. And you can learn all about them and what they do. What they are doing today, which may be over by the time you hear this program, is working really hard in the State House to ensure that programs and research and funding and initiatives are secured for the coming year. And in the last few minutes that we have, Christy, let's key in on something irrelevant of the success or failure of initiatives that may be on the State House floor as we're speaking today, is going to continue to plague our state until the last case is eliminated, and that's elder abuse. Is this something that has one single initiative going on in the State House, or a multitude of them?
So, and that's a wonderful question. So elder abuse is a very complex issue. This is something that's up and coming, again, with the changing demographics in our state, but also on a national level. So the legislature last year charged our office to do an elder abuse study, a study on elder abuse, and also develop a training module for financial agents, which is on our website. And what this training module is, it's basically some signs and symptoms of elder abuse. We also have resources that we've gathered from other states. And we've had more than 10,000 people visit our site to get information about this. there is some pending legislation right now in the House around this, because in this report we had a number of recommendations to kind of proactively look at elder abuse. And particularly it's complicated because financial exploitation of an older person, you know, this costs millions of dollars. So it's definitely an issue that we're going to continue to work on, and it's going to continue to evolve as the years passed.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other key initiatives that, as we speak today, appear to be tracking towards success that are really important to the commission?
So we continue to work on any initiative that supports aging in place, livable communities, community readiness. And, you know, we do this. We're a small office. We're four people. We do all of this work, you know, with the mighty team of four that we are, right. And within the challenges that we continue to face with budgetary issues around the state, and you know, that's continuing to play out now as we speak with our workload and our office.
Excellent. Christy Covell, as we said, is a very valued friend and resource to us prior to her work with the Connecticut Legislative Commission on Aging. You've heard her on this program representing the great folks with the Alzheimer's Association here in Connecticut. Now she is working for all of the folks as we are aging toward retirement. Eventually, the Connecticut Legislative Commission on Aging is a nonpartisan public policy and research office of the Connecticut General Assembly that's charged with improving the quality of life for older adults of today and tomorrow. And we really appreciate taking a few minutes, Christy, to come and visit with us today. Once again, if you'd like to learn more about the work of the Connecticut's Legislative Commission on Aging, their website is coa.cga.ct.gov. Christy, thanks so much for being part of the program this morning and visiting with us here in our Hartford studios.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and don't necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.vocat, V as in Victor, O-K-E-T, at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for another installment of the award-winning For the People, or listen to this and other For the People podcasts under the podcast tab on our station's website or on iTunes. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.